For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them and made 5 talents more. So also he who had 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of these servants came and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here I have made 5 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little, I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. And he who also who had the 2 talents came forward saying, Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here, I have made 2 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little, I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. He also who had received the 1 talent came forward saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours. But his master answered him, You wicked and slothful servant! You knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I scattered no seed? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you, Link. Well, good morning. My name's Kyle. I'm one of the pastors here at Grace. We're continuing our series on the 7 deadly sins today, and today we get to sloth. Just saying that word sounds depressing and discouraging and sad. It just kind of comes out of your mouth and it's gross. Our initial reaction to sloth, if we're honest, especially here in the Woodlands, where excellence and productivity and busyness are celebrated and even cultivated, might be sloth. I don't struggle with that. Look at how productive I am. Look at how successful I am. Look at all I have to show for myself. And that's exactly why some of the ancient writers, when they wrote about sloth, said that it's actually the most vicious of the 7. It's like a boa constrictor. It creeps and it slithers slowly until it's wrapped itself around you, squeezing the very life out of you. So this morning, we're going to look at this parable that Link read from Matthew 25 from Jesus to really help give us an insight into what sloth really is and how damaging it really is to us. So again, when you first hear the word sloth, what's your first initial reaction? What's the word that comes to mind? If you're like me, it's laziness. And when I think of laziness, the first thing that comes to mind for me is George Costanza from Seinfeld. You know, George introduces himself to a woman at a diner and he says, Hi, my name's George, I'm unemployed and I live with my parents. One of my favorite lines that George says in the show is when he's explaining to Jerry and Elaine why he always and immediately quits that anytime anything gets a little bit difficult, he says this. He says, My father was a quitter, my grandfather was a quitter, I was born to give up. George even goes so far as when he gets a job with the New York Yankees, he has a carpenter come in and he builds a bed under his desk so that he can take a nap whenever he wants, hidden from his bosses. His laziness is really celebrated on the show. But slothfulness, it goes much deeper than just sheer laziness. It goes much, much deeper than just taking a nap under your desk, even though that may be part of it. It's not just about being lazy. One preacher said it this way. He said, sloth punctures a hole in the tire of our soul and creates a slow leak until it sucks the energy and life out of us. It's much more destructive and evil than just laziness. The ancient writers, when they wrote about it, they called it the demon of indifference. They said it was the most insidious and corrupting of the seven deadly sins. So this morning, why does this matter to us? Another writer, Jeff Cook, said this about sloth. Nothing is clearly so modern, clearly so Western as is sloth. So this is a serious problem for the world around us. It's a serious problem for the church. And one of the things that makes it so dangerous and destructive is that we really don't think it's our problem. We really think that if we're successful, we're productive, if my life looks great on paper, it's really not my problem. I mean, how many times, be honest, have you heard someone say, you know what I'm really struggling with? You know what my big sin that I'm really struggling with is? It's sloth. Like, we hear anger, you hear lust, but we never hear about sloth. And that's where this slow boa constrictor-like creep of sloth really takes its hold on us. So if we have to ask, you know, if we say sloth, it's not just laziness. Well, what is it? Because I think if we really often want to limit sloth to just be laziness. We just want to define it as that. Because if it's just laziness, it's really easier to define and it's really easier for us to manage. But one writer said this. They said, we shouldn't picture sloth as a laid-back couch potato. Soul-restoring, celebratory rest is a major part of the well-lived life. Sloth is more like the Grim Reaper. It's the messenger of death who with bony fingers pokes the spots in our lives that ought to be thriving and causes them to atrophy. So if sloth is the demon of indifference and it's not just laziness, what are we supposed to do with that this morning? The point of this sermon, just so you know, is not to turn you all into type A personalities who are really productive and are go-getters for Jesus. That's not what we're doing. That's not what we're after this morning. Dante said it this way. He said, ultimately, sloth is a failure to love God with all of our heart, with all of our mind, with all of our soul. And so it's in direct opposition to the life that Jesus has called us to. At its core, it's indifference and it's a failure to live. The Bible wants us to know that we were created as image bearers of God with dignity, that we're meant to thrive and to worship and to enjoy God and his good gifts, to be about his plans and his purposes. So if we look at our text for today, the master, he's leaving, and he entrusts to his servants his property. He gives one 5 talents, one 2 talents, and another one talent. Now we hear talent, and we're like, what does that even mean? A talent in Jesus' day, it was an amount of money that really equaled about 20 years worth of work. So to modernize it, he gives one 10 million. He gives one 5 million. He gives one 1 million. The point of this story that Jesus wants to know is this is no small amount of money. It's a huge gift. It's a huge responsibility. It's a really big deal. And the first servant, the first two servants we see, they're faithful with the trust of the master. They go out with his gift, and they double the amount that the master has given them. And then we come to the third servant, and his response is pretty odd, if we're honest. He buries his portion in the ground. Now, if you were a first century Jew living in Jerusalem, this wouldn't have been that weird to you because their banking system wasn't great. And so if you had something that was of really significant value to you, what you would do is you'd go out in your backyard, you'd dig a hole, and you'd bury it, because that way, if robbers came to your house, they wouldn't find your treasure buried in your backyard. So at its core, it really is this way to keep things safe, a way to protect it from getting lost or stolen. And honestly, the servant probably thought he was being prudent because at least the money's not going anywhere. But we see that the master returns. And the third servant comes to him in verse 24 and he says, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, have what is yours. And the master replies kind of confusingly to us. And he says, you wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I haven't sown, and I gather where I scatter no seed. So what's going on here? Why is the master so upset that he calls the servant wicked and slothful? Well, it's because the servant, in his lack of faithfulness toward the master, in his misunderstanding of who the master is and what he's really about, in his inactivity with the gift given to him, he reveals his true heart. And what he shows is that he's actually indifferent towards the master. He doesn't care about the things the master cares about. He doesn't care about the master himself. And here lies the problem with sloth for us. Dorothy Sayers painfully describes sloth this way. She writes, "It's the sin that believes in nothing, cares for nothing, seeks to know nothing, interferes with nothing, enjoys nothing, hates nothing, finds purpose in nothing, lives for nothing, and remains alive because there's nothing for which it will die." Sloth is that demon of indifference, and it just doesn't care. When Ella was little, one of our favorite books to read at night was called Pierre, A Cautionary Tale in 5 chapters and a prologue. It's by Maurice Sendak, and it's about this big. It's awesome. But in this story, there's this little boy named Pierre, and the refrain that he echoes throughout the story is, "I don't care." He doesn't care that his mother loves him and adores him. He doesn't care what he's going to eat. He doesn't care that he's going to get in trouble. He doesn't care that he's holding up his family from going about their business. He doesn't care that his actions actually affect other people. And there's this great scene at the end of the book where Pierre comes face to face with the lion, and they have this exchange. It says, "The lion looked Pierre right in the eye and asked him if he'd like to die. Pierre said, 'I don't care. I can eat you, don't you see? I don't care. And you will be inside of me. I don't care. Then you'll never have to bother with a mother and a father. I don't care. Is that all you have to say? I don't care. Then I'll eat you if I may. I don't care.' So the lion ate Pierre." So this morning, we have to ask ourselves, where do we not care? Where do I not care about God and his call to love him and love our neighbors? Again, we have a tendency to think that if we're successful in our jobs, if we're getting good grades, if we're keeping our homes tidy and together, if our children are behaving, if we're providing for our families, we're being successful, then we're not being slothful. But the reality is our busyness can often be a mask for slothfulness. So if slothfulness is indifference, if it's not caring, we have to ask ourselves, where are we being slothful in our relationships, in our friendships, in our marriages, with our spouses, with our children, with our friends, with our church, with God himself? Do we take time to love and to care for those around us? Do you listen, or do you just want to be heard? You know, do you pursue other people when they've wronged you and they don't deserve your grace and mercy? You know, relationships really take effort. They take tending like a garden. And so we need to ask ourselves, you know, where are the weeds in our relationships? You know, in your friendships, do people really know you? Do you really know them? Or do you just get involved with people who you think can get you something in return? You know, where do we take God's grace for granted, and we just ignore him and his call on us? Another writer describes sloth this way. They say it's an excessive interest in and love of oneself and a deficient interest in and love for other people. A great poet, Taylor Swift, says it this way. She says in her song, "I forgot that you existed. I forgot that you existed, and I thought it would kill me, but it didn't. And it was so nice, so peaceful and quiet. I forgot that you existed. It isn't love. It isn't hate. It's just indifference." There it is again, that demon of indifference that is so destructive to us. So we have to ask ourselves, where are you indifferent this morning? Who are you indifferent towards? You know, are we concerned for the needs of others, or are we just concerned about having our own needs met? You know, who are the people that you don't care about? You know, when you see it this way, when you're in a conversation with someone, are you driving it back to yourself constantly and how you can one-up them or how you have something to offer? Or are you trying to know, trying to understand and listen and hear where they're coming from, what they're struggling through, what they're processing? You know, or do we make excuses like the servant does in our text? He says, "I knew you were a hard man, So I was afraid and I hid your talent in the ground. You know, where do we make excuses for our lack of faithfulness, either in our relationships, in our work, in our church, in our own spiritual lives? You know, one of the questions that this text is forcing us to ask ourselves is this: do I really care about God's kingdom? Do I really care about His purposes and His call to love and to serve those around me? Or am I just concerned about my own kingdom, my own comfort, my own wounds, having my own needs met? So is spiritual sloth present for us? You know, one philosopher said it this way. He said, let others complain that the age is wicked. My complaint is that it's wicked because it lacks passion. So what are you passionate about this morning? Are we passionate about the gospel? Are we passionate about Jesus dying for sinners, offering grace and mercy and forgiveness to those who don't deserve it? Are we passionate about justice, about serving the poor? Are we passionate about Jesus recreating this world, about expanding His kingdom through loving Him and serving others and sharing the good news of the gospel? Are we passionate about beauty and about virtue? Or are we like Pierre and we're passionate about nothing at all? Are we passionate about things that really at their core, they're trivial? We're really busy, we're really successful, but we're frantically pouring our time and our energy into things that ultimately don't matter. Sloth is much deeper than just laziness. It's much more multifaceted than we realize. And if we're honest, it pulls on all of us. So we've tried to define sloth this morning, but what about the damage that sloth does? If you look at verse 30 of our text, the worthless servant is thrown out into the outer darkness. This is a place of weeping and gnashing of teeth. It's ultimately a description of hell from Jesus. It doesn't sound appealing. It doesn't sound desirable at all. It's not a place you want to vacation even. But that's where sloth, unrestrained, unchained, ultimately leads. That slow leak leads us away from living kingdom life, and it leads us towards death itself. So sloth, unleashed, is moving towards the darkness, where ultimately you're cut off from relationship, you're cut off from community, you're cut off from encouragement, you're cut off from correction and love and grace and worship. For the servant, it's really the path of least resistance. You know, on the surface, it doesn't cost him anything to bury the talent. You know, he's afraid to move out to pursue the good of those around him, to pursue his master's purposes. So notice that sloth, it's a slow creep that happens over time. The master leaves, he comes back much later than the servant anticipated, and the servant, while the master was gone, has slowly let the air in the tire of his soul be leaked out. Sloth is like a fog, and the servant is caught up in it. I don't know how many of you have spent a lot of time in the mountains. I went to college on Lookout Mountain in Georgia, and it would be this just beautiful sunny day. And then in the distance, you would see the clouds coming in over the hills, and very slowly, the clouds would settle on top of the mountain. And before you knew it, you couldn't see 3 feet in front of you. You couldn't see your academic building. You couldn't see anything around you. And if you were driving when this happened, you would just pray that your lights would hit the reflectors and you would just have to hug the center line or else you'd go off the mountain. This fog, it crept in and you couldn't see where you're going and you're engulfed in this gray haze and this darkness with no way out. And that's a picture of what sloth really is for us. It creeps in slowly over time because it's a misunderstanding of who God is and what He's about. And it takes over and it ultimately leads you into darkness away from the master. So sloth buries the talent. It buries the good gifts that God gives us for His plans and His purposes. It refuses to see Him as the creator, as the one who alone is worthy of our worship and worthy of our lives, the one who's loving and merciful and tender and just. And it takes the good things that He's given us and it causes us to turn our noses up at Him and say, "This is really what I think about you. I just don't care. I'm not using what you've given me to love and to serve those around me. I'm only concerned for myself. I don't care about your kingdom. I don't care about extending its boundaries. I'm only here for me. You don't matter. So sloth buries God's good gifts, and it waits. But as we wait for Jesus to return, for our master to return, our waiting isn't to be about inactivity. It's not about turning in on yourself. It's not about trying to perfect your own holiness. It's not about trying to satisfy your own appetite, trying to insulate yourself even from the world around you. You know, what we see from the other two servants is it's active participation in the master's business. It's multiplying his grace. It's multiplying his love and his mercy and his forgiveness, his unity and his peace. It's recognizing what Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, so whether you eat or you drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. So another way for us to think about what sloth actually is, it's a lack of worship in the one true creating and saving God. So we have to ask ourselves, are we a worshiping people? You know, in everything we do, whose glory are we actually pursuing? Are we pursuing God's glory? By being obedient to him, by faithfully putting our hand to whatever plow is in front of us, showing and revealing his character and his grace and his kindness and his love and his commitment to redeem and to restore all things? Or are we pursuing our own glory, our own comfort, our own ease and our own rest and our own safety? Spiritually speaking, sloth, it's a willful neglect of our spiritual lives. So again, we have to ask ourselves, are you connected in worship? Do we worship according to our own tastes and our own comfort and what we enjoy? You know, do we get put off when things don't go exactly according to our preferences? Or are we here for Jesus, to celebrate him and the work that he's done and the work that he's doing? You know, we were created to thrive in community. We weren't meant to be off by ourselves being lone rangers. So do we seek to know others and to be deeply known by them in soul and deep revealing ways? You know, is community something that you're desperate for, something that you long for? Sloth, in its fullness, it yields fear and hopelessness and guilt and shame and a lack of relationship. It's like that fog that leaves you in the darkness. So if you find yourself there this morning, what's the way out? What hope do we have? What's the way that we can care about the things the master cares about? How do we defeat sloth? Well, the answer to defeating sloth, it isn't just try harder. It's not get your act together, care more, do more, care harder, get it together. The answer is actually what Jaime prayed earlier. It's to rest in Jesus. Jesus says, come, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Jesus is our true Sabbath. He's our true rest. He says, stop trying to come to me and making yourself more diligent. Stop trying to make yourself less slothful apart from me. Come to me. Rest in me, Jesus says. And the beautiful thing is that Jesus doesn't wait until you're diligent enough. He doesn't wait until you're productive enough or until you're perfect enough or until you're not slothful enough to move towards you and pursue you. We don't need a new game plan, a new regimen, a new spiritual set of self-help steps. We need what Paul says in Ephesians chapter 5. We need Jesus to actually shine on us. In Ephesians 5:14, Paul says, awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. We need to wake up. We need Christ to shine on us. It's not going to be from anything that we can do or produce or muster from our own strength. It's going to only be because Jesus wakes us up through his Spirit. And the way that we do that is we go back and we feast on the gospel of grace and forgiveness time and time again. We need to take it in and let it fill us and let it nourish us. And let it be the energy that we need to walk towards Jesus. That's what we're going to do in just a few moments when we come here to the table. We're going to feast on Jesus and his grace for us. We need to see that our diligence, our effort, it's never going to be enough. We need to rest in Jesus' diligence on our behalf and his sacrifice and his work on our behalf. We can praise God this morning that Jesus isn't slothful towards us. He's not indifferent towards you. Remember, the beauty of the gospel is this, that Jesus, while we were still sinners, died for us. So Jesus, the holy and the perfect one, becomes the one who was slothful. He becomes the one who doesn't care about God and his purposes. He becomes the one who is indifferent, the one who is passionate about nothing, so that you could be made his. So that when God looks at you, he sees Jesus, and he bursts into song, and he rejoices and sings and bubbles over with joy and excitement because of you. The only way that we're going to be able to move out of our sloth, to care about the things that God cares about, is if we see and we believe and we experience that we've been deeply cared for. If we see that we've been loved when there was nothing lovable or good in us to offer him, and that Jesus pursued us to the point of death and being separated from the Father, it's only there that we're going to begin to care about the things that the Father cares about. Thomas Chalmers summarizes it this way. He says, we need an expulsive power of a new affection. If we see that we've been loved, that we've been pursued and cared for, then and only then will that drive out our indifference and our lack of caring, and will be filled with the concerns and the passions of the Master. One of my favorite movies is The Count of Monte Cristo. And there's this great scene in it where Edmond Dantès, the main character, has just escaped from being wrongfully imprisoned in this on this remote island, on this castle. And so he's swimming to escape, and he washes up on shore, and he comes across this group of pirates and smugglers. And they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with one of their smugglers who's wronged them and their crew. His name's Jacopo. And so they're trying to figure out what's going to be a good and a fair punishment for Jacopo. And so thankfully, this stranger washes up on shore, and they say, okay, this is what we're going to do. They say to the stranger, to Edmund, they say, okay, you and Jacopo are going to fight to the death with these two knives. And if Jacopo dies, then he'll get what he deserves. And if Jacopo wins and you die, then at least the men will have seen some sport. So Jacopo and Dantès, they start fighting. And Dantès pins him on the ground, and he raises his knife, and he throws it in the ground, and he looks at the pirate captain, and he says, why don't you let us both live? The men who wanted to see some sport, they've gotten it. The men who wanted to see mercy shown to Jacopo and have him be released, they will get it, and now you'll have two able-bodied sailors instead of just one. And the captain allows it, and Jacopo, who's pinned on the ground, reaches up, and he grabs Dantès, and he pulls him close, and he says, I am your man forever. You see, Jacopo has an encounter with grace. He's given new life. He's experienced mercy, and what it does in Jacopo is it changes his whole outlook on life. He transforms his plans and his purposes to be all about Dantès now. And so the question is for us, is how do we respond to the grace and the mercy, the new life that Jesus has given to us? How do you respond to Jesus taking all of your sin and all of your punishment on himself so that you could be his? So that you could enjoy the Master's joy and favor forever with him. So that you get to take part and join him in pursuing God's plans and purposes for his kingdom, for renewing and redeeming all of creation. Are you indifferent about it? You know, does Jesus' work allow you to rest in him, or are you still trying to rest in yourself? Are you like Pierre? You just don't care at all. May the goodness of the gospel again and again drive out our indifference and give us the cares of the one who cared enough to pursue us to death so that we could experience life and mercy and grace in him, pursuing his plans and purposes. Please pray with me. Father, we thank you for your kindness and your grace towards us. We thank you for your mercy and your goodness. We thank you that you have pursued us to death, that you have called us to yourself, that you have made us yours. Help us to care about the things that you care about, to be so transformed by your gospel that we have your cares for your world, that we see the world around us through your eyes. Help us to join you in partnering with you and loving your world back to life through the goodness of your gospel, through the sacrifice of your Son, and through the faithful service of your Holy Spirit. In Jesus' name, we pray.